Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This podcast was originally released to our Patreon members. To support what we do on Arseblog and get extra bonus content, visit patreon.com/arseblog.
Hello and welcome to this unusual Arsecast, because it is me, James from Gunnerblog, speaking first. Unprecedented. In a time of unprecedented things, this is also probably unprecedented. I'm joined, as ever, by Andrew from Arseblog. Hello, how are you, Andrew?
I'm fine, James. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. Yeah. I'm feeling the pressure a bit, feeling the responsibility of steering the ship.
It's different when you're in the other chair in the pilot seat, isn't it?
It's not as easy as it looks, I tell you. Yeah, I can see why you always screw up the intro. It's difficult.
Always. I take some slight umbrage at that.
Well, the reason that we're this way round is because a few people have been in touch on Twitter or on the Discord or wherever it might be, saying, could we do an Arsecast about the history of Arseblog and how it was built, you know, how you got into it and what went on. And so who better to do the interview than me, the man from the Arsecast Extra that isn't Arseblog? It's perfect.
It seems like a nice little setup here. We just switch around and see where it takes us, yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to be able to relax in that environment, or do you think you're going to be like a sort of backseat driver, worried about where this is going, do you know what I mean? Trying to steer it, even though you're not technically in control.
No, I quite like being interviewed. You know, it's one of those things where I think it's really quite easy, because people are just asking you questions. So unless it's like, what is the circumference of, you know, the world, or, you know, the average rainfall in the Amazon basin, you can find an answer. So I'm very
You've
relaxed.
Seen my notes then.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm very
you
relaxed.
Know what's coming up.
Windows open. I'm barefoot in a pair of shorts. It's quite good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds it. Barefoot. Okay. It's a very chilled Arsecast. Well, look, let's go right back to the beginning. So when did Arseblog actually start?
February 2002, to be precise. That was the very first post on arseblog.com.
Right, okay. And had you been sort of active in on the kind of Arsenal online community before then?
Yeah.
On the sites that existed previously?
Yeah, I mean, I'd let me think what I was doing. There was a thing called the Arsenal mailing list, which was people would just email back and forth.
I wasn't on this. So for people who weren't involved, is that literally just like a long chain of reply all emails?
Kind of, yeah. You would just reply. I think the reply address was whatever, mailing list at arsenalmailinglist.com or whatever. And someone would like type whatever it might be, whether it was about a match or about a scenario or a situation or whatever it was. Someone would type an email, and then people would reply to those emails, and you would have the conversations going off in different directions. I seem to remember there were some sort of rules that, you know, let's say someone wrote a 400-word email, but you were only replying to one particular section of it. You had to sort of make sure you clipped out the rest of it, so you weren't just like sending swathes of text that were irrelevant.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. So, and Clive Palmer was also on that mailing list, I believe.
That is right. Clive Palmer is one of, I think, probably the first person that I ever met in real life off the internet, if that makes sense.
Wow.
Because one of the things that they did, and this was at a time, you have to remember, this was maybe 98 or 99, the idea of meeting people from the internet was fraught with danger, even if you were a grown-up man. Who's to say you weren't being groomed by somebody and, you know, you could be taken away and held captive and slave and all those kind of things. It was just a weird thing. It was like, where are you going? I remember saying, I'm going to a football match to see Arsenal play Barcelona at Wembley in the Champions League. All right, and who are you going with? Well, nobody. I'm going to meet some people there. And it's like, well, what people? My internet friends. You know, yes, that kind of way?
Yeah, there was a lot more stigma around that at that time, I think it's fair to say. Probably justifiably, I don't know. But, yeah, but you met Clive. Was that 1999 that you met Clive then?
Yeah, it was. It was at that game. It was there was a meet-up for the Arsenal mailing list in a place right beside Wembley. And
Arsenal lost, if I recall.
We lost 4-2. To Barcelona, that's right. Yeah. There was a meetup in a sort of a bar near Wembley. It was quite close to the stadium, and we all had some pints and shot the breeze and everything else. So, yeah, that was my first thing. And then there were some mailing lists, or no, message boards, forums. Mm. There was the Arsenal World Forum. And then there was another world which existed, because back then there were games weren't on the radio or on the TV, so there a lot of them were on the radio, and a lot of them you could get on Capital Radio. There were no sort of issues with rights,
right?
So there was a thing. Did you ever use a thing called IRC?
Yes, I did. I can't even remember why, but it's yes, I did use IRC.
Yeah, so there was a community of people who would meet on IRC.
Which is like a kind of messaging service.
Yeah, it's like, it's just like a chat room. Yeah, it's basically a chat room, a slightly less user-friendly chat room than you would get on the sort of the websites and what have you. But we'd all meet in there for the games, and because we could sometimes get the games on the radio, sometimes not, I remember there were two guys from Australia, one guy called Steve Gleiber, I can't remember his name.
Yes, I remember him.
And he had an Arsenal website, which I believe is still going. Unfortunately, he passed away some years ago. And there was another guy, oh God, I can't remember his name, but they seemed to have loads of the games on in Australia. So what he would do is he would actually do what I do with the live blog now, basically. He would type out stuff and we'd all be watching. And if you could hear the radio, it would be great. But you were following the game, watching somebody else type it out. And, you know, every week, for every game, we would meet and chat about football and, experience Arsenal in that strange, weird way. So there were lots of things sort of going on online that I'd been flirting around with.
Yeah. And so what compelled you to start your own blog?
Well, I'd moved to Barcelona from Dublin in 2001.
Right.
And just before I'd done that, I'd set up a little web design business with a friend of mine. And the idea, which wasn't a bad one, was basically to sell really, well, not necessarily cheap, but really easy packages for people to get a website. So you get your website, you get your hosting, you get your email. If you're a small business, you might get like little shopping cart stuff put in. Mm-hmm. And it was called getmeonline.net.
Good name.
Not a bad name at all, and conceptually quite good.
But quite ahead of its time in some ways. I mean, it was everywhere now.
Exactly. Would it be that thing? You come along, I want a website, here you go, bang, bang. You know, it's quick and easy.
Effectively. Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
You invented Squarespace.
Oh, my God, I can't believe I fucked that up. anyway, we were doing that, and I moved to Spain, but we were keeping it going, and I was trying to learn how to do web design. You know, I was trying to learn how to build websites and make things, you know, make things appear in the right place and make sure that they looked actually okay. Mm-hmm. So I was playing around with stuff like that. And the first iteration of Arsblog was not about Arsenal. It was much more specific.
Just arses?
No, not even arses. It was about Robert Pires.
Oh.
And
some would say it still is.
It still is. I set up a website, again, to sort of help me practice. It was called The Church of Bob. And it was essentially based around the idea that Robert Pires was, a cult leader, if you like, and everybody was part of the Church of Bob. And I'm not talking like, you know, who's the guy that made everyone drink all the Kool-Aid? Not quite
sure.
That. Not quite that. God, Jim Jones, was that it?
Jim Jones, yeah, that is his name.
So it wasn't necessarily as evil as that. It was quite a benevolent sort of cult because everybody just loved Robert Pires. And it was just a funny kind of a thing. But around that time, blogs themselves started to become prevalent. So people were doing these diary-style websites, and it occurred to me that perhaps there might be just a little more content or a little more to write about and do with Arsenal Football Club than just one specific player.
Right. Broaden your horizons.
Yeah. And it was also the idea that, like, it's a football club, so there's always something going on, whether it's a match, you know, a transfer, an injury, you know, news, gossip, all of those things were going to provide content. And the idea initially was to do the website and to sort of hone my web designing skills along the way.
Yeah. And so it wasn't called Arseblog in the first instance.
Well, it was. I mean, I bought the name. I thought about, what are you going to call a blog? I knew it was a blog. And what are you going to call a blog about Arsenal other than Arseblog? So I registered the domain name, arseblog.com, and sort of was... I didn't use any kind of blogging software for years. We just did a page.
Really? I was about to ask.
Yeah, no, it was...
It wasn't Blogger or something like that.
It wasn't Blogger, even though there was Blogger out there. There was another one called Movable Type, which is one that I don't think is in use anymore. WordPress wasn't really around, or if it was, it was in the very early stages. But basically, it was a page that was hand-coded every day. So I'd write something and then just hand-code it into the page and do it that way. So, yeah, that's what it was. That's how it began.
And in that first instance, how did you set about trying to get readers? Because obviously now you've got, you know, Google search results and things like that, all kinds of things. But were you, you know, out in forums saying, hey, check out my blog? How did you get it started?
I don't know. I don't remember ever really doing that, going on to places and just sort of spamming with the link. There was no social media, of course, at that point. So I don't quite know. I mean, I must have sort of posted it on the Arsenal World message board or something like that.
Yeah. Just to give it a little kickstart. There must have been something. But yeah, it's kind of... I'm trying to think of the other sites that are around. Arsenal World was definitely around, wasn't it? Arseweb.
There were loads. Yeah, Arseweb was a big one as well. There was one called Boring Boring Arsenal. I actually found some photos. I actually was cleaning out the shed a few weeks ago. It was probably longer than that, more than a few weeks ago. But I found an old notebook in which I had listed all the Arsenal websites that I could find. And I've got to tell you, James, there were fucking loads of them.
Even then.
Let me just see if I can find it. Arsenal websites. I'm just sort of Googling here. Arsenal. Oh, yeah, here it is. So I've got I'll put this in the show notes for this one. But, you know, just to read you one half of one page of the sites that I could find. So there was Arsenal World, there was at AFC, which was this guy who wrote really funny match reports. Do you remember that one?
I actually don't remember that.
Right, his name was Red Geezer, and he used to write the most amazingly scathing match reports, particularly at a time when we were really quite good.
I do remember that.
We were really quite good. So there was Steve Gleiber's side, AFCI, Arseweb, Arse Online, Arsenal News Review, Nygren's Arsenal Goals, the Arsenal mailing list, Up the Arse, Wengerland, Gunnernet, 70s and 80s Gunners, Keith Murdoch's Arsenal side, Arsenal in Oz, Boring Boring Arsenal, Goon Arse, Zakir's Arsenal site, the Arsenal website, Arsenal unofficial website, the AFC online fanzine, Jacko's page, and that's just one half of like four pages of Arsenal sites that were doing the rounds back in, I would imagine, the late 90s, early 2000s.
It is kind of extraordinary, isn't it? Because you know, obviously, Obviously, now there's such a massive proliferation of different websites and social media accounts all about Arsenal. Mm. But even back then, it already had that sort of footprint.
Yeah, exactly. People were just doing their own thing, you know. So,
do you put that down to? Why do you think that Arsenal has kind of always had that culture around it in a way that certain other big clubs
haven't necessarily? I don't know. I mean, I guess to an extent that Arsblog played a part in the sort of blog explosion anyway.
Definitely.
Because you can answer that now in a minute, I guess. But before that, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I mean, look, I can't say that there weren't loads of Liverpool sites or Man United sites or whatever, because I wasn't really paying any attention to that. But certainly throughout the 2000s and when the blogging thing really took off, Arsenal were really to the fore in that. There was, you know, there were just so many blogs out there for people to read, which I always thought was a great thing.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, as time went on, I think there's a degree of imitation there in terms of, you know, Arsblog became so big. I think it probably inspired the creation of a lot of other blogs, myself included. But was your commitment right from the start, I'm going to do this every day? Does that something that happened by accident, or is it something you thought that's going to be my thing?
Well, the idea was to do something every day so I could learn something new about how to design, right? So I could like try and, you know, put a picture in this way or change the site around. And in the early days, the actual design of the site changed quite frequently, as did the name of the site. The initial name of the site was Arsblog, the inconsequential ramblings of an Arsenal fan. Until such time as we won the FA Cup in 2002, and they interviewed Freddie Ljungberg on TV, and they said, "Freddie, what was it like to win the FA Cup?" And he went, "It's fucking excellent." So that was the tagline then. I sort of dropped that long, inconsequential ramblings bullshit and just put Arsblog, "It's fucking excellent," which I think really did kind of set the tone for the site, you know?
Is that still there? Is that still the slogan?
It is on the... It's not in the title that you get on the website anymore.
Right.
That sort of went away when Ole Ole happened and they got rid of it for search.
We shall get to them.
We will get to them. But if you look on the website, if you look at the logo in the top left, it's Arsblog and It's Fucking Excellent is in the little canon. So yes, it's still there.
And it's funny, that resonates so much better in terms of like the tone of the site than the inconsequential ramblings. Even though, you know, some days there are inconsequential ramblings.
Many days.
As we're all aware. Particularly with the absence of football.
Yeah.
But, you know, how did other people start to get involved? Because I think as long as I have known you, it's felt like Tom has been part of Arsblog. So when did that happen and when did it start to be slightly more than just, you know, you on your own?
What I discovered quite quickly was that I was good at writing and good at putting words down on paper, but not necessarily good at web design and certainly not very good at techie stuff. Like, I'm not bad. You know, I can sort of fiddle my way around with things, but, you know, there are people out there who are far better than I am at it. And Tom is one of those. So Tom... For the first little while, the website didn't have any comments. So we then, maybe after a few months, introduced a comment system, which was like a plugin that you got from another website.
Right.
And, it, you know, we had the arses, and we would get maybe 20 comments in a day in the early stages. And there were some people reading back then who are still reading to this day, and they would be like the first iteration of arsers and, you know, regulars. Well, the regulars that I knew about, because I knew there were people reading, but there wasn't really any way for interaction apart from email.
Okay. Did you have analytics this early on?
I think so. But again, it wasn't really something that I paid a great deal of attention to. You know, it wasn't, because this wasn't, like, it wasn't important, really, how many people were reading. You know, it wasn't, that wasn't the aim.
There was a different purpose of for you.
But I remember the service that did the comments, they shut down or it broke or something like that.
Right.
And Tom was one of the first regulars. Tom was one of the first people who had been involved on the arses, you know, as someone who commented. And he you know, without that system in place, I think he emailed me and said, look, I can put something together. Would you like that? And it was like, well, yes, that would be fucking great. Brilliant. Mm. So, you know, Tom, from a technical point of view, has been involved right from the very start. You know, when we had a forum on the website, which, you know, where a big community grew as well, as you know, you're part of that. Mm-hmm. But Tom, you know, when it came to web hosting and when it came to servers and when it came to those kind of things, was just so much more knowledgeable than I was about those kind of things. So down the years, he's really been like a bedrock for the website in terms of it being available. And, you know, people having a website to visit every morning in no small part is down to Tom. You know, in particular, over the last few months where we've moved everything and, you know, we've changed our hosting and all that kind of stuff, he's still managing all of that stuff in ways that I can't really get my head around. But he knows what he's doing, and that's the main thing.
He's a very, very smart guy. So in the beginning, in this period, it's worth mentioning, I suppose, that you were doing this kind of in your spare time, right? You were juggling it alongside other jobs.
Yeah, I was teaching English over in Spain, and I was trying to make that other company work, which, you know, ultimately didn't happen. And I think what sort of gave it a real kick, there were two things which gave it a real boost. One was I would just sort of post something or, you know, put something on the site whenever I felt like it. And, right, you know, it could be morning, it could be midday, it could be evening, whatever. But I got a job in Barcelona. This is one of those for the worst jobs you ever had.
Okay.
One of the very first iterations of what we all now know as a chatbot. Right? You know when you go to a website and this little face pops up and says, how can I help you?
Talk to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you type in like blah, whatever it is, and it gives you a list of answers. Right. Mm-hmm. So I got a job in Barcelona working for a company who had been commissioned to make one of those for IKEA.
Okay.
Right. So consider just for one second the amount of products that IKEA has.
Many, many, many.
So you have to program this thing, and it was a program. I mean, that sounds utterly wanky. It was basically data entry. We were filling fields in spreadsheets, but it was basically so this little head would pop up, and you could say, "Hello, I want to know more about the Malmo bookcase," and it would say, sure, "The Malmo bookcase is I don't know." You had to give like how tall it was, how wide it was, how many there were in stock, where you could get all these kind of things. I mean, it was absolutely mind-numbingly awful. It was just fucking terrible. It really was. But it meant, because I was living at that time, I was living about 40 minutes outside Barcelona on the train. Uh-huh. So I had to get up every morning, go down to the train station, get on train to Barcelona, go to work, come back from the work as a normal person does. You know, they go out of the house, they go to work, they come home. You know, it's not earth-shattering. But I started posting every single morning before I would go to work.
You're writing it on the train, or you'd get up early?
No, on the train. Are you, what? No, I got up early. Yeah, we do. I mean, we didn't have fucking laptops that didn't weigh the size of a small elephant, and there was no Wi-Fi, and, you know, I think mobile phone internet was, do you remember WAP? Was that what it was called?
Yes,
if you could somehow get something on your Nokia.
Painfully slow.
Yeah, painfully slow. So I would get up, post it, go to work, come back, blah, blah, blah. And at the same time, people were beginning to get faster internet, particularly in the UK, you know, with ADSL and things like that. And people were in work, and work internet was not quite as restrictive, I'd say, as it is now. So you could just go to any website you wanted, and there were no filters and stuff like that. So that frequency, that regularity of having like what was essentially an Arsenal morning edition every single day, really gave the site a push at a key time.
And then I suppose consequently you'd get that kind of chat throughout the day that happened I guess first on the arses and then later in the forums.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of overlap between those two communities, or are they quite distinct?
There is a lot of overlap, or there was a lot of overlap, but there are people who go on the arses who have never been on the forum, and people who are on the forum who never go on the arses, and what have you. So, yeah, look, they did cross over, and there was, you know, some fun bants, if you like, between the two sides down the years. But, you know, you know, it's just, you know, people like the thing they like. So if you like the arses, that was a good conversation to have and a good way to have the conversation. And yeah. Forum different, because there were many different topics, like in most sort of forums that people are aware of, you know, on the internet.
I seem to remember it was quite difficult to get in the forum. I remember having to fill out a little Q&A.
Yeah, how did you...
It had to be vetted.
How did you find the site? Here's a question. Sorry, just one question for me. How did you find it?
How did I find Arseblog?
If you can remember.
That's a really good question. I'm not sure. I think it would have been through a message board, probably through the Arsenal World message board.
Right.
But it very quickly just became part of my... daily routine. I think what you say is absolutely right, that it just being there in the morning, you know, you have your little regime, don't you? You have things that you do, and increasingly for people that's not read the newspaper, it's go on a blog or go on their social media feeds. But even back then, yeah, it would be the first, one of the first websites I would check, probably.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just became something. And then I remember there was a forum, and I think you had to basically apply and sort of give your credentials as an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
And if you came across okay, you were allowed in.
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I sort of snuck in through there. And then, yeah, like you say, a kind of community sort of blossomed around that.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I think, one of the things that, you know, I was quite aware that if you are, you know, I knew the site was popular. So if you had, like, an open forum that anybody could come along and join... your chances of, with all due respect to everyone out there, attracting some of the wrong people who could make the place a bit toxic and what have you, were higher. So,
yeah. Some of the forums out there were quite like that.
Yeah, they were, yeah. So it was always, I think it was initially open for everybody, and then it was closed and remains closed to new people. But, you know, the application process... For the most part, weeded out the undesirables, if you like. You managed to sneak through.
I slipped through. Some get through the cracks.
A few others, and we've had a few bannings and what have you down the years, but it remained a very manageable community in terms of size and in terms of the amount of stuff that's getting posted on there. If it's, I shudder to think what it would have been like if it had been, you know, with the popularity of the site, just so many people posting message after message after message, and how you manage that and deal with trolls and deal with, you know, people saying things they shouldn't say and everything else. So
One of the things that is really interesting about the forum, and I guess the answers to an extent too, is how much, and we see it on the Discord now, how much the conversation diversifies beyond football, right, and beyond Arsenal, certainly. It became much broader than that. And if I think about it, like, there were discussions on every possible subject, you know? It was quite amazing, really.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, on a weekday on the arses, for example, you know, if there's no match, people are still there because they've become part of a community, and the you know, the conversations that went on from basically the first arse every day to the last arse, whenever that might happen at night, it was just basically a big chat room that people were you know, got to know each other really well, and they would just talk all day, whether it was about football or not. Sometimes, you know, I know that people have said, like, they came along and they would open up the arses and they'd look to leave a comment about whatever it was I might have written that day, and then seen 20 messages talking about God knows what, like, you know, why Smurfs are, you know, worse than I don't know what, you know?
Trolls.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then go, well, fuck, I don't know how to deal with this. And it took some people a bit of time, you know, they'd lurk for a while and then have a look and then sort of dip their toe in and see what it was like. But
Yeah. Lurkers, that was a thing, wasn't it, for a long time on lots of websites.
Yeah, I think there's lurkers on every forum and every sort of chat system and what have you. There's people who just read the comments, for example. They like reading the comments and reading the interactions, but they're not necessarily that interested in joining in themselves, which is fine. You know, it's human nature.
On the subjects of comments and things like that, how have you, sort of jumping forward a bit and sort of, you know, looking at how toxic some of those environments can be, is there and has there always been a sort of degree of kind of policing the site? You know, do you have to enforce rules in order to keep it nice?
Yes, you do. But I think from the very start, I was quite clear about what was acceptable and what wasn't. So I never had any issue with somebody coming along and using bad language. You were never going to get slagged or told, please mind your language.
Sure.
Because, you know, back in the day, the blog was swearier than it is now. So I couldn't tell people, you know, well, you can't swear. But it was from the very start, there were things like, you know, don't be racist, obviously. Don't be sexist. Don't be homophobic. Don't use the word yid if you're talking about Tottenham, right? Those sort of things. Like no ticket touting. If you're having a discussion, talk about the subject. Don't sort of resort to name calling, things like that. You know, it was those kind of things that I put in place quite quickly. And they were easy to understand, and the communities became a little bit self-policing, you know. So there was stuff like don't use acronyms like LOL and whatever. That was a little bit of snobbery, but it sort of fed into the kind of people who were coming into the community and using the comments every day. Of course, over the years, in 18 years, you've got people who transgress and who don't abide by the rules or who don't think that the rules should apply to them. And the comments on Arsblog News, for example, were more difficult or are more difficult to look after than the arses.
Right, because they're bringing in a different kind of reader, I guess.
Sort of, because it's news, it's immediate reaction to things, and also because the actual comment system itself is your classic, leave your name, leave your email, post a comment.
Right.
Again, there are things on there we have, you know, WordPress allows you to have a moderation list, so you can put words in there, which if people use the word, will hold their comment. So if someone says,
I love Teddy Sheringham.
Yeah, exactly. Or fuck the yids when they're talking about Tottenham. It doesn't get published. Right. So I can then go through what needs to be moderated, what doesn't, and you release the ones that are fine. I mean, there are over 1,000 IP addresses, usernames, phrases, and things that have been built up over the years that are in the moderation list. So that will tell you just kind of how much you have to stay on top of it. But I do think that you have to, because if you have a comment section that is noxious and toxic and full of unacceptable language or what have you, it reflects on you as the guy who owns the site, right? Mm-hmm. Even if it's not you saying those things, you're allowing them to be published on your website. So it, you know, it reflects on you, and that's why I've always tried to stay on top of that.
Yeah, and there's quite a lot of work in that, I think. Mm. I mean, I know from when I had my own blog that sometimes things would happen in the comments and you've got to get in there and deal with it, but there is a degree of, you know, you can program in certain stuff to be removed automatically, but you know, there is a degree of management there
for sure.
So was Arsblog beginning to take up more and more of your time, and how did it begin to shift from being a hobby essentially to something more like your job?
Well, when I came back from Spain, no, I didn't come back to a job in Ireland. So I was looking to do various things like voiceover work and what have you, which, you know, I found some of that and that was good. But I was looking to try and make some money from the website. But, you know, I'm not a sales guy, right? Do you remember there was a book called the Arsenal Opus. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
A big book. And one of the guys who was on the Arses and on the forum, Bergkamp Fan was his name. As I'm yes. sure you know him. He was working in like digital media and advertising and stuff like that. And he came to me and he said, look, we've got this campaign. O2 want to run a campaign on the website. And, you know, how much would it cost to run ads for a month? And I was like, no, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I literally had no idea what I should be charging for that. And I remember him saying, I remember I said something to him like, £400? And he went, will you just stop? Don't be silly. Don't be silly. And I was like, oh, well, have I overestimated that? And he was like, well, no, you've like completely underestimated it. And eventually got me a deal which was worth maybe around $3,000 or $4,000 for a month, which was like, whoa, what the fuck? Which was a huge amount back then, you know, it really was a huge amount.
Because so that kind of opened your eyes.
Yeah,
it sort of opened
my eyes to that kind of stuff. And then there was, you know, various sponsorships and the ole ole thing started happening, whereby I was doing a podcast for them. They were sponsoring the Arsecast, which began in 2006. And it began to get a little bit more. It began to be something that generated me some revenue around 2007, I would say.
Okay.
From then on, it started to earn me some money, but, you know, certainly not anywhere near what you might call, you know, full-time employment or anything.
Right, okay. So you were still having to do other bits and pieces alongside it in that period.
Yeah.
And what kind of stuff was that? I mean, voiceovers have always been a thing for you, haven't they?
Voiceovers? I'm trying to remember what else I was doing. I mean, a lot of voiceover stuff. So I got like gigs. A friend of mine got me a gig doing voiceovers for Satanta Sports.
Yes, I remember well.
Still do a little bit of for them. Well, Satanta Sports not anymore, but they're Fox Sports and ESPN and what have you. So doing that and doing commercials. And I can't remember what else I did. I mean, I must have done. I don't remember very clearly what I was doing from a work point of view, because I think what had happened was when we came back from Spain, because we'd sold a house, we had a little bit of money, like not masses of money or anything like it, but just a little bit. So it wasn't a case I had to go like work in a bar or work, you know, 9 to 5 or something like that.
Sure. You could kind of see how things
went. Yeah, a little
play
bit.
By ear.
A little bit. Yeah.
And so the Arsecast started, what year did you say, sorry?
2006, October.
And that was pretty early for a podcast, as far as I recall.
Yes, I think it was. And, you know, because of my background in radio, I've always liked, like, it's the most amazing medium because you can just go and do what you want. You have a blank slate, you can say what you want, and you can do silly voices and make up characters and nobody's going to tell you, stop, you can't do this because this is your own thing. So, yeah, it was really early for podcasts. I guess it must be one of the longest running podcasts around.
Yeah. And were you into podcasts at that early stage and thought, I'm going to do one of these?
I'm not sure I was into them, but I became aware of them. I started reading about them and then it was like, hang on a minute. This is like a radio show. You can hear yourself. And you just upload it and people listen. This is great.
It was kind of perfect.
Yeah, exactly. So I was quite happy and I'm quite comfortable behind a microphone. I was never worried about, you know, having nothing to say. But I did, you know, I think that's why in the early stages there were lots of things, you know, there were lots of little skits and lots of characters and you know, I hadn't spent a great deal of time interviewing people.
True.
And I think you were on one of the first ones, maybe the second one or the third one.
Right,
I can't remember.
But it was a lot of like getting other bloggers on and things like that, right?
Exactly. Getting bloggers on.
Sketches.
And, and just whatever, trying to make something. And the show back then was probably 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes. You know, it wasn't quite as in-depth as it is now. But it was what it was back in the day, and people took to it very quickly, I think. Again, it was sort of being one of the first people to do it made it, I don't know if it made it more interesting to people, but it was, I think for a while, it was probably the only Arsenal podcast out there. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal, the football club, have only just launched theirs. What are we, like 14 years on? Mm. So, yeah, it was definitely well ahead of the game. So let's, you mentioned LA, LA briefly, sorry, not yeah. LA. How did all that come about? And, yeah, what happened there?
Well, you know, they wanted a podcast. So they wanted a general football podcast. There was actually another guy who was a regular on the site called Sol. And he was involved with them. They were a startup in LA, and their idea was like football social networking, right?
Right.
So like a Facebook for football, but they wanted a podcast. So I got myself and the Mug Smasher, and we produced a weekly football podcast. We used,
what was that called?
The Week in Football, something like that.
Right, okay.
But we used sort of stage names.
okay.
I was John Johnson, and he was Tom Thompson.
Nice.
And we would do chat about football, and then we'd a Spanish football correspondent, which happened to be a mate of mine who's Italian in Spain, and we'd an Italian football correspondent, and we'd a Scottish football correspondent, a guy called Kevin Graham, who's a Celtic blogger. He used to be called the Lord of the Wing, and now he's doing one called A Celtic State of Mind and what have you. And we just chat about football. And then I was approached, you know, about selling the site or becoming part of this network that they were putting together, which was basically, you know, they were going to get an Arsenal side, a Liverpool side, a Spurs side, which they did. There was a Barcelona side, whatever. But the guy came to me in Dublin. I'd tell you exactly when it was as well. It was the game in which Eduardo had his leg broken. I met the guy in a bar in Dublin.
That was a sign, Andrew.
It was. I should have fucking run a mile. but I met him there that morning, and we watched the game, and it was quite traumatic from a footballing point of view. But he had, you know, the idea was he was going to make me an offer for the website. Okay. And I thought he might come along and say, here is a lump of money, this is what we're going to do. But what he did was he offered me a monthly salary.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a sort of figure in mind that I, you know, would have been quite happy with.
Mm.
And he offered me double that.
Right.
So I was like, okay. Okay, well, yeah, let's do this. Let's do this. So in order to seal the deal, they brought me out to Los Angeles. They flew me to LA, put me up on Rodeo Drive in a boutique hotel there. There was, however, another warning sign when nobody was at the airport to pick me up, even though they were supposed to be.
but still, I would absolutely hook, line, sinker go for this. You know, double what you're thinking of. Flown out to LA, very swish, very fancy.
Yeah.
And in theory, just carrying on doing kind of what you were already doing.
Exactly. That was the thing. I mean, I did have some stipulations that, you know, the blog was going to continue. It moved from arsblog.com to oleole.com/arsblog.
Mm-hmm.
But that was fine. And I said, look, I'm not going to take any direction in what I say. I won't be told what I can write. I'm going to write the way I've always written. And they were happy with that. I said, you know, stuff like the arses and the forum, they have to continue the way that they are. They were happy with that. You know, I kept the podcast going, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, in the back of my mind, there was an element of, well, this feels a little bit too good to be true.
Sure.
And it was true for a while, and then it stopped being completely true. And then it became a bit less true, and then not very true at all. But one of the things that I did very luckily was insist that within my contract, saying that if at any point Ole Ole closed down, everything reverted to me, which ultimately is what happened. Yeah.
And when you say it sort of ceased to be true, like, can you go into that at all? Like,
yeah.
What went wrong?
Well, they ran out of money.
Right.
They stopped paying me. They wouldn't take any of the advice that we gave them as people who are running blogs about football teams in England and what have you.
Yeah.
you know, this idea that you would be like a Facebook friend with a Tottenham fan, for example, just wasn't going to happen. They thought mm-hmm. there'd be this, like, great interaction between all the fans, and you could set up your own blog and stuff on Ole Ole. That was another part of what they were doing. So you could go, and if you were reading our blog, you could come along and say, hey, I want to set up a blog. So you set up your blog, you start writing, and they were going to amass this get this critical mass of user-generated content, which was going to propel the site and everything else. And it just was just didn't work, you know. It didn't work the way they thought it was going to work, and they stopped paying me, basically. Or you get half your wages 1 month and then nothing. And, you know, when this happened, just before it happened, or maybe around the time it happened, we bought a house here in Dublin.
Right.
We bought a house in 2008. Can you remember something else that happened in 2008, apart from Eduardo getting his leg broken?
The global recession.
Yes, the financial
which
crash.
Which was particularly bad in Ireland, as
yes,
far as I recall.
Yes, it was. So what we had was a hyperinflated property market, at the very top of which I bought my house. And then it was fine because I was getting paid by this company and getting paid well by this company. But when it stopped going well, you know, there were problems with paying the mortgage and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, they left me in a really bad position financially when eventually it came back to me, I think late in 2010. You know, it had gone maybe 6 months and I'd got 20% of my wages. So that
and
meant
by this time, presumably the site is taking up, you know, the majority of your time at this stage.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, so that was
where
difficult.
Where do you go from there?
Yeah, where do you go from there? Well, you have discussions with the bank and you tell them I can't afford to pay my mortgage. And then you have discussions with revenue because the money that you were supposed to pay in taxes, you need to live on and stuff like that. So you have to make some kind of an arrangement with them. And that's not a pleasant thing to go through. And banks, as I'm sure lots of people know, as institutions are absolute cunts when they want to be. And the bank that I had were quite difficult, even though I, you know, always tried my best to act in good faith and to repay the money over time. But from a site point of view, it was like, well, what do I do? You know, because do I just say, fuck it, that's it, it's over? And I go get a job somewhere and I bring in some regular 9-to-5 income, which was very tempting because as a self-employed person yourself, you know that there are days and weeks where you think, fuck, it'd be great just to go to work on Monday. At 9 o'clock, come home at 5, do it again from Monday to Friday, and know how much money you're going to earn in a week, in a month, in a year. Whereas when you're sort of trying to build a business, you've got no idea. 1 week or 1 month could be good, the next month could be terrible. But I also had the problem where I didn't know what the fuck it was I did at that point. You know, I didn't know, like I was a technical support manager and had some customer service experience, but I really didn't want to go back and do that because I didn't like it, you know. The office environment, if you're a creatively minded person, the office environment is really quite stifling.
But equally, I guess, you know, at that point you're kind of, you're jack of all trades, master of some, but it's difficult to know if you were to get a job, what you would do,
or,
you know, what you'd want to do.
Exactly. So the idea occurred to me that, like, well, how do I generate more revenue from the site? And I had it on a whiteboard here in my office for ages. I think the formula was more content equals more page views. More page views equals more ad impressions. More ad impressions equals more revenue. Yeah. So
it sounds scientifically sound.
It does. And the way that I thought about doing it was to set up an Arsenal news site. And I wavered over it because it was, look, the commitment that you have to make to doing something like that is not small. Because if you're doing Arsenal news, you're doing something that happens 7 days a week. So you've got to be prepared to do that. You've got to be prepared to work every time there's a match on. Mm-hmm. Rather than just sit and watch a match, you've got to do all the various bits and bobs that have developed over the years. So I was a little bit worried about doing it and doing it on my own, which is where Andrew Allen comes into things.
Beautiful Andrew Allen.
Yes.
Lovely beard.
With his lovely beard.
And his lovely hair.
He was working for a site called sport.co.uk.
I remember them.
As a writer, and I knew Andrew a little bit because he would sometimes email me stuff and say, look, we've got a story on sport.uk that's Arsenal related. If you want to give us a link, you know, from Arsblog, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and I seem to remember they had a couple of little exclusive lines in their time on transfers and things like that. That were Arsenal related. I forget what exactly.
I think they were Arshavin related. They were to do with Dennis Lechter, who was Arshavin's agent, as you know. But around the time I was thinking about doing this, that website folded. It went under. So I contacted Andrew and said, look, this is what I'm thinking of doing. Would you be interested in doing it with me? I can't pay you a salary, but I can give you a percentage of all the revenue that the site generates.
Right.
And he said yes, and we set it up, which was in... I can go back and look at the archives here, can't I? I think it was June 2000 and let me have a look here. June 2011. Holy shit. And our very first story on Arsblog News was about the Arsenal women, if I recall correctly. Arsenal ladies win FA Cup was our first story, followed the next day by Bentner, I must leave Arsenal, followed by Robin tells Chelsea to shut the fuck up. So I think, you know, we set the tone there quite well.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, that was the thing, wasn't it? It was the news, but with a distinctly Arsenal and Arsblog flavour.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it was always about not taking everything too seriously, but also, you know, it was, again, when we come back to building something and maintaining something and how people perceive it, we were really, really careful from the start not to do things which would annoy people. By which, I mean sort of clickbait content.
Yeah.
Clickbait transfer rumors, clickbait headlines, those kind of things, absolutely verboten. No way were we going to do that. And the other thing was like advertising. So we would have our Google ads on the website, but we would never have pop-ups or pop-unders or interstitials or anything that obscure the content or autoplay videos or anything like that, which would have been more lucrative. Like, I mean, I'm sure you must have got offers when you were running Gunnerblog, will you run this ad on the website? Like, frequently, I would turn down ads and offers from people who say, look, this is an ad. It'll do a pop-up once every 24 hours, you know, for each visitor, and we will pay you $2,000 or $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the site itself wasn't even doing that in a month, you know, in ad revenue, and you're being offered these things, and it's so tempting. But you realize that if you do it, you go down a road that's very hard to come back from. Like, for example, let's say Caught Offside decided to rebrand themselves as a serious intellectual football website. They'd never be able to do it because of all the shit that's come before, you know? So you sort of blot your copybook with things like that. So we were very careful not to build something that people were happy to visit and they weren't annoyed by, because so many websites at that time were annoying, weren't they? You'd click and then a load of shit would open up. And
yeah, and I think, you know, plenty of websites are still like that, to be honest. But
accept our cookies.
Yeah, that's the new thing, I guess.
I've accepted every fucking cookie in the world at this point and I still get those messages.
I know, I'm chowing down on cookies and they're still coming up. But yeah, that's a really interesting point, protecting, I guess, the user experience, to use a bit of wanky language.
Sure.
But also, in terms of the way that Ask Blog News would deal with the news, say with the transfer rumours, for example, having things like the Pooometer, like knowing that some of it's bullshit,
yeah,
is kind of important, right? Not attempting to make money out of lies, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and look, you can't be blind to the fact as well that transfer rumours are really interesting and people love them and what have you, but it was about doing it in a way which allowed, let's say, some interaction or some fun or some people to, you know, the people who are reading the site to not take it too seriously themselves. So we would have the Pooometer and people could rate from 1 to 10 out of 10 poos, you know, just how true a rumor was. So 1 poo was like something lovely and solid, and 10 poos was runny, absolute shite.
An absolute
disaster. So, yeah, things like that allowed you to sort of dip your toe into that world, but do it in a way which wasn't what everyone else was doing, if you like.
And the obvious question, I suppose, is having sort of wrestled control back of Arsblog from LA and being sort of on your own again, have you ever since then had offers from people who've wanted to buy the site off you or take the site off you, and has your experience with LA kind of changed how you feel about that sort of thing?
Well I mean there was one not so long ago, small little website called The Athletic.
Never heard of them.
No?
Never heard of them.
Should check them out. I think you might fit well there. They were interested. It never got to the point where we discussed money or anything like that, because I was quite upfront with them and just said, look, I've built something here. It was about a year after we started the Patreon.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I had done was make a commitment when we launched the Patreon that everything that was free on the website would remain free. So Patreon was bonus stuff, it was extra content, it was giving people extra value for their subscription and for their support, and I just felt like I couldn't in good conscience or in good faith, having made that commitment to people who were supportive and generous to, you know, put their hand in their own pocket and subscribe month after month, to then sort of say, well, thanks very much for your money there. Now I'm going to take this money here. And basically everything that Arsblog had become would have gone behind a paywall, or it would have, my writing and what have you would only have existed behind a different paywall. So I couldn't do that. And then there was also the Olé Olé thing in that. And I'm not suggesting that The Athletic are anything like Olé Olé, because from what I can see, they're a much smarter, a much more organized, a much better run business with smart people at the top of it who know what they're doing and know how to build something and understand the markets in which they're operating. But, you know, I've sort of been there, worn that T-shirt, and I didn't really want to go down that way again, having spent the time building it to what it is now. To sort of give it away again just didn't make any sense.
And also, being your own boss is good, right?
It is. It is good. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into the website, and there's a lot of work that goes into, you know, creating all the content every day. You know, whether we have football or we don't have football at the moment, there's still a lot of work. And as you referenced on the Arscast Extra on Monday, you know, the idea of weekends is a strange one. If you do what we do, right? Because you work Monday to Friday anyway, because those are just working days. And then you're working at least one of the days at the weekend because there's a match on and you're sort of tied up with doing all the match stuff. But there is also a freedom in that, like, I can do my blog in the morning, check and see if there's any news. And if there isn't, you know, I can go out with the dogs for a couple of hours, or I can go and, you know, do my dad's shopping, or I can wander off and do, you know, whatever and come back. So it's not that you're sort of chained to your desk 18 hours a day, but, you know, my typical day starts at 6 in the morning. I come upstairs, I do the blog, and I finish around 10, maybe 11, sometimes midnight, depending on what's going on, you know? But it's not as if you're working every hour of that period. So there is a freedom that comes with it, and Yeah, so that part of it is good.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
And I'm just thinking in terms of the chronology, it was January 2014 when the Arscast was supplemented by the Arscast Extra.
Yeah.
I actually had a look through my emails today.
Oh, yeah.
And I found this email you to me, which says, "Hey, man, I know you're away or something, but very dismissive. But when you get back, would be good to have a chat. Was thinking about another podcast, perhaps something we could co-host. Maybe take reader questions via Twitter. Some calls, etc." The calls fell by the wayside. It was too technically complicated. "Might work best immediately after matches, but there's definitely a gap in the market for something more up-to-date." And basically, I mean, whatever you wrote in that email is effectively how it's turned out.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, the thing about the Friday Arsecast was that, you know, it was generally based around the game that was coming up that weekend.
Yeah.
Or, you know, to be fair, there was post-match stuff, you know, when we were in the Champions League, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, you know, you could have a chat on Thursday about the game that happened in midweek. But basically, it was sort of out of date, wasn't it, by Saturday or Sunday, depending on the match.
Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily supposed to be a post-match podcast per se, but I think that's obviously, I don't remember looking at it from that point of view. I just saw, you know, there was definitely room for another podcast. And then I do remember thinking, like, well, who would be a good co-host out of all, you know, the people that have been on the pod down the years? And I think as well, obviously, the fact that you were a kind of freelance guy.
I was available, you mean?
Yeah. But the fact that your work sort of allowed you to be around on a Monday morning, whereas, let's say, Jim, the man from East Lower,
exactly,
he wouldn't be around on a Monday morning because he's you know, he's got a real job, which isn't to dismiss your choice of career or anything, you know, but I sort of knew you would be available, and I thought the dynamic would be quite good, and I'm glad my instincts were right.
Yeah, well, we'd done probably quite a number of normal Arscasts by that point. I'd probably been on quite a few times. And
yeah,
again, me being available was factoring that, you know, if something happened or
sure,
whatever, I was often around. But yeah, I mean, I said yes, obviously, and that we're still going on that. So, yeah, so far so good.
Happy ever after, I hope.
Yeah, ever after. Well, I mean, I don't think it's any great secret. I think I said it at the time, but when when I was approached by The Athletic, I think in their ideal world, they would have liked to be able to say that I was sort of exclusively doing that football-wise. But
yeah,
I was very clear that I wanted to carry on doing Ask Cast Extra. And fortunately, that's worked out.
Yeah, and great.
Yeah, so hopefully happily ever after. We'll see. I mean, who knows? The Athletic might go under in a year or something like that. There might just be another LA. I'm not counting my chickens. Let's
okay.
put it like that.
Yeah, all right.
So what was I going to say? Yes, yeah, so that happened. And then, I mean, I'm trying to figure it out. Maybe you'll remember better than me. But did you start getting columnists and stuff before the Patreon?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, one of the first columnist, obviously, was Tim Stillman around the time when Ole Ole went to shit. And before I started the news site, there was probably a 4 or 5 month gap, maybe a bit more, actually. I think it was around October when I got the site back from Ole Ole. And it was June, as I said, June 2011. So it took a while for news to come in. But again, that sort of mantra about producing more content was out there, and I'd been reading Tim's stuff on Vital Arsenal, yeah, where he was posting under the name Little Dutch VA. And I remember I emailed them, actually. I emailed them first rather than approaching Tim, and I said,
well,
look,
like the transfer regulations dictate.
Exactly. Yeah, I didn't want to just tap him up.
Must agree a fee first.
Yeah, so I said, look, I would be interested in Tim doing a column for the website. Would you have any objections if I spoke to him? Because, you know, I didn't want to sort of create any beef or anything with the website. And they said, no, go ahead. So I emailed Tim and he came on board. I'm trying to think, am I forgetting anyone?
Arsenal Gent, maybe?
Arsenal Gent was later.
Right.
That was later. That was certainly after news had been up and running for quite a while. And it was just like, I really... this guy makes me laugh a lot. And I know he's sort of an acquired taste. I know not everyone likes it, but it just makes me laugh. The turns of phrase make me laugh. So I approached him to do something. Yeah. It's just sort of over the years adding bits and pieces on.
I guess it was that a bit scary in some ways to sort of allow, because it's always been your writing and your voice, to have like a diversification of different contributors. Was that a bit weird, letting go of that to an extent?
No, not really, because actually in the early days there were some columnists as well.
Oh, right. Okay.
We published some articles by other writers, so it wasn't completely out of the ordinary for that to happen. So
guest posts and things,
yeah,
like that.
Exactly. But I wasn't worried about it or scared by it. I thought, you know, it would be good to have a range of opinions and a range of voices on the site. And it was always obvious that it wasn't me. You know, it was, you know, the people who write have always been distinct. They get their own byline, you know, they get their own little avatar and what have you. So, you know, if it's an Arseblog article, it's me. And if it's Tim or if it's the Gent or, you know, the columnists that we have over on the news site with stats, you know, Tim from 7 a.m. Kickoff and Scott, you know, doing their things. You know, they've always been Lewis as well doing tactics, Anam who did tactics as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always been obvious that they're the ones who are writing that. So right. I think that's okay.
And I know you've been over this before, but kind of what drove the decision to launch the Patreon?
It was a way to grow the site and to kind of future-proof the website.
Right. Looking at kind of the trend in how, I suppose, with advertising revenue, did you find that Arsenal kind of rode the wave of that and then the wave was fading away?
Yeah, it would sort of go up and down and it would fluctuate. And again, it was one of those things where you're thinking, well, look, it could be good one month and not great another month. And you know, that lack of security in your income is difficult. Plus, you know, I wanted to properly pay people for what they were doing on the website and for the contributions that they were making to the website. And it wasn't that people weren't being paid, but I don't think people were being paid commensurate to the value that I thought they had to what we were doing. And we were going to build our own membership system and everything else. We went a little bit down the road in terms of that with Tom and another friend of mine, Alex, who does our player rating system. He developed that for us. And we were going to build something. But the implications of sort of managing people's financials and credit card and all that kind of stuff were just a bit. It was just too much for me. You know, I couldn't be, I just felt like I couldn't be responsible for the security of people's financial information and data and what have you.
That's scary. Yeah,
it is, you know, like
I'd have that fear.
You'd be bereft if something happened and, you know, that information got hacked or whatever it is. So I felt, you know, I've been aware of Patreon and that felt like a good way to go for us. And, you know, I think what's been very interesting about it is the amount of people who've come on board to get more, which is great, and that's why it's there, but also the amount of people who are just on board because they've been, you know, readers or listeners for many years and they want to support and they just want to give a little back every month to sort of say thanks for everything that they've got for free down the years and continue to get for free and everything else. So it's a really nice... been a really nice part of it, you know, because I'm conscious that you need to give people value for their money and everything else, but that support element of it has been really lovely, and I don't know what more to say about that. It is actually just really lovely that people are on board because they like what we do, and I don't just mean me, I mean you and Andrew and, you know, everybody that does stuff, Tim that does stuff for the site. They appreciate it, and they're willing to put their hand in their pocket for it a little bit every month. So,
yeah. And also, you know, even the Patreon has enabled the site, you know, I can see from the outside, to expand into different content, different things that it just wouldn't have otherwise been able to do. I mean, and some of that's behind a paywall and some of it isn't. You know, the coverage of the women's team, for example, has really stepped up since then in a big way, and that's great to see.
Yeah, exactly. And that's because I could say to Tim, look, I can pay you now to do more about the Arsenal women's team. I can actually pay you more money to write and produce stuff for the Arsenal women's team. And I think, you know, I can't speak for Tim, but I feel like he's really enjoyed that side of things. And, you know, he's obviously very close to the team and the way it's set up and enjoys what they do and their success and their team. But I think he enjoys, you know, being able to produce content around, you know, what is the most successful Arsenal team at the moment. So, you know, it works for both of us. But yeah, you're right. The same with the youth team with George Bird.
Absolutely.
I was able to say to George, look, do me 3 articles a week on the youth team and the reserves. You know, he's got his own blog and he writes stuff for that, but do me 3 articles a week and this is what I can pay you. And he's like, okay, great. And he does. You know, at the moment he's not because, you know, there isn't anything to write about. But, sure. You know, it was being able to sort of say to him, look, if you do this, I can do this for you. And it works for everyone, for me, for him, for the audience, because, you know, at the end of the day, they get more to read.
And it is kind of amazing, I suppose. I only really, now I think about it, do I see that at Arsblog, you've got a bunch of people who kind of had their own blogs, you know, people like me, George, you know, Tim from 7am Kickoff when he was doing it, who have kind of all come under that umbrella in a way. And that's quite a nice element of it too, I think.
Yeah.
But what does the future hold? Like, as in, do you have ambitions for Arsblog? Do you think about, we need to do more of this? Like, what can people look forward to, do you think? Football coming back?
Yeah, that would be a big help, wouldn't it? What can we look? I think obviously video content and doing more stuff on video is important because there's such a huge demand for it, and it's not really something I'm that comfortable with. I know you're You will film yourself doing anything, let's face it.
Sure, I will film myself doing anything, yeah. But, you have always been a little bit more reticent, that camera shy.
Yeah, like we were saying the other week when I did the Norwegian TV thing, those are things that I get asked to do quite often, and I'm like, nah, James can do that. That's fine.
Sure.
I don't want to be on TV, but I do think probably, you know, YouTube content in some fashion is something I've never really, you know, I've never been a strategist in that I've, you know, beyond the sort of when it all went to shit thinking, well, what the fuck do I do now? Where I had to make some vague plan. I've never sort of sat down and etched out the roadmap for Arsblog for the year to come. And what are we going to do this year? I've always just kind of done things. Mm-hmm. I get an idea, I do it, and if it's good, it stays. And if it doesn't work out so well, I'll just sort of quietly drop it and we'll never speak of that again. So I don't quite know. I mean, I think just being aware of technology and aware of how people want to consume content is a part of it, you know? So, you know, there was no social media, but now everybody's on Twitter and everyone's on Facebook and everyone's on Instagram and everyone's on YouTube and, you know, what's next? I'm not necessarily saying we're going down the Arsblog TikTok route. I don't think that's quite what's going to happen. But, you know, I hope, obviously, that we get football back soon. And after that, I'll just try and keep making the best stuff possible for people and the best podcasts and writing and analysis and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I know that there are big operations that exist in other platforms, you know, and I can't, you know, let's say I couldn't possibly do what Arsenal Fan TV do, right?
Sure.
I can't and wouldn't even begin to try and do that. I know that there, you know, there's another long-running website that has set up their own YouTube channel as a kind of a more fan-friendly Arsenal Fan TV version. You know, that's going to happen. But I think there's always going to be people who want to read something. There's always going to be people who want to listen to something, and that's kind of where our strengths lie, and that's where I think we'll focus. But, you know, I just can't say, and particularly at the moment, it's very, very difficult to say what comes next. But, you know, hopefully people will stick with us and we can go on that journey together wherever it is.
And I think it would be probably remiss not to ask this, because people always ask me and I have to say, I don't know. Can you give people any kind of indication of how popular the site is and how big its reach is?
Well, I mean, look,
generally, is that sort of sensitive information? I don't actually know.
It's not really sensitive information, but you know what? It's not something that I look at in a big way. I think probably, you know, around when football was up and running and going, we have maybe, what would you say, 40, 50,000 people read the blog every day,
right?
Which is a lot.
A football stadium's worth of people.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not the same people, and different posts are more popular than others. You know, we will do over 1 million podcast downloads every month. News is very busy, or was very busy, because there was a lot going on. There was a lot happening, you know. So match report, player ratings, analysis, reaction, stats, you know, all that kind of stuff generates a lot of traffic and a lot of page views. So you're talking millions and millions of page views every month. But yeah, I mean, it is. It's big, and it goes everywhere in the world. There isn't, you know, a country in the world that doesn't visit the site on a monthly basis. I mean, the two big markets are obviously the UK, which is about 45% of our visitors and listeners. Right. This is sort of across the board, kind of.
Broadly.
Yeah, broadly speaking. And then about 25% in the States, which is, you know, a huge part of our audience is in the US. And, you know, again, sort of going back to what you want your site to be and how you want it to be perceived. You know, look, I can't sort of stand up and say, I am the epitome of a true Arsenal fan, right? Because I'm an Irish guy who set up a website about an English club while I was living in Barcelona, and I run it from Dublin. So I'm not like dyed-in-the-wool N5 Islington boy, grew up, you know, up and down the North Bank or the Clock End or whatever it might be. You know, that's not my Arsenal experience. So I never tried to even pretend that that's what it was. But I've always been, or tried to make the site as inclusive as possible to everybody, because, you know, I'm no better or worse an Arsenal fan. Well, some people might say I'm worse, but, you know, I'm no better an Arsenal fan than anybody else, in my opinion. And whether you're from London, whether you're from New York, from Texas, from Pakistan, from Australia, from Africa, from Ireland, Scandinavia, wherever you are from, your affection and your love and your passion for the football club is real. Mm. Your experience of it might be different. It's unique. You know, it's a different thing if you're a guy who lives, you know, on the Holloway Road than if you live on somewhere else. You know, it's obvious it's a very different experience, but nobody is sort of pretending that we all have to have the same experience to feel the way we feel about the football club. So that's something I've always tried to do, is to make sure that nobody feels excluded from this worldwide global community that we have as Arsenal fans.
Hmm. Yeah, so that's very cool, I think. The international element and, you know, I mean, it's not just UK and US. I'm sure there's, you know, Africa's probably a healthy chunk of readership.
Yes,
and,
yes, for sure, for sure.
I mean, yeah, it's crazy how it goes. But I think we've kind of covered it. Do you think there's anything we've missed?
I don't think so. But look, how about we do this as for our Patreon subscribers? There have been some questions on the Discord, so let's fly through the questions on the Discord as a little extra for the Patreon subscribers, and as a thanks to them for their continued support. And we'll bang through these questions and see how
which channel is it in. Patreon stuff.
It's in Patreon stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Let's bang through some of these. Oh, wow, there's some good ones here. Okay, worst interview you've done for the blog. We kind of did that on the Askcast Extra, didn't we? That was the Nord who asked that.
We did. The worst interview. I tell you, one of the only ones that I did that never got broadcast on the Askcast was Alan Davies.
Oh, really?
Because he had dropped his phone in the toilet that week, and we did the interview, and the audio was just basically unsalvageable. I couldn't make it listenable because of whatever was going wrong with his phone. So that was, from a technical point of view, that was the worst interview because, you know, as everybody knows, Alan is a very passionate Arsenal fan, but a very funny man as well. So it was a shame it didn't go out.
That is a such shame. But have you done one with him since?
I think so, but he has promised to do one again in the near future. So for giving the Tuesday Club a bit of a plug on its return, I said, look, you know, will you do one? And he said, yep. So we'll do that at some point in the next few weeks.
Cool. Look forward to that. What, says Wise Marklar, is the biggest maybe I shouldn't have said that moment you've had?
There's only one thing that really stands out to me that I kind
and
of...
that's the thing you should say.
That's it. That I kind of regret. The sort of the cornerstone of writing something for me every day is being honest, right? So you're honest about what you feel, because you can stand by it. Even if in time, let's say you're proven wrong, you can say, well, look, that's the way I felt at the time. I feel like if you try and write something for someone or for people and you're writing what they want to hear, at some point you're going to contradict yourself, because what the people want to hear one week is different the next week, or, you know, 3 months down the line. And if you're trying to please the people, then you're going to trip yourself up. So I've always been honest. So I can look back on pretty much everything I've written on the website and say, I'm okay with the sentiment, because I know when I wrote it, it was the way that I felt at the time.
Right.
But I would say what I thought or what I wrote about, remember when Aboué came on as a sub and was terrible and
yeah.
was booed and taken off? And I'm not sure I was as sympathetic as I should have been, because I was, he was a player who really, really frustrated me, you know?
Yeah.
And I think now I would write about that situation differently. So that would be the only one. But it's not like I'm embarrassed or I'm ashamed or what have you. It was my honest opinion at the time. And, you know, looking back on it, you soften your views and you think I could have been nicer.
Also, hindsight is involved.
Hindsight, you know, yeah.
Look at how Aboué's story has turned out, and you know, we know a bit more about him now as a character and how well he might have been able to deal with that or not.
Yeah,
And of course, that influences things. So I think that's inevitable. There's going to be things like that. Hazza says, was there ever a rivalry between the different blogs, or have you always been so delightful to each other?
I don't think there's ever been any rivalry, certainly not between us. You know, and I think...
No. I mean, you were giving me a lot of support in the early days of me doing the blog.
Well,
so.
I never viewed anybody as competition, you know. I never looked at it like that. I always thought, well, you know, there's another blog for people to read, and if they want to read it, they can read it. It's not like you had to choose just one blog to read. You could read, you know, when you think back on it, my daily reading would include Gunnar Blog, A Cultured Left Foot, Gunnar Holic, Good Player. God, there were loads. I'm trying to remember half the blogs that were out there. But you would read all of them.
I used to read Arsenal News Review, of course.
Yeah, Miles Palmer, I would read it. I mean, he didn't like me for a while.
Maybe that's the closest thing to a bit of a rivalry, maybe.
We did do, in fairness, the spoof of Arsenal News Review by, and people think it was me. It wasn't me. It was somebody else who wrote this, the character of Leopold Mendacious, and he would just mimic Miles Palmer's style of you know, talking about how, you know, in the 50s on the old fucking Kent Road, he was at a gig and he saw, you know, all that kind of rock and roll stuff he would put in there. And they were really, really funny, but I'm not sure he necessarily saw the joke.
Sure, yeah. what about this one? David the Sky. I think we'd had this on the Arts Cast Extra as well the other day. Who was the first star, famous person, ex-player, etc., on the show, and how did you feel interviewing them? I think it was Perry Groves.
Well, I think he was the first player.
Right.
And the reason we did the interview with Perry Groves was because he had released a book around the time that Ashley Cole released a book. Do you remember? Remember Ashley Cole released that book with he had the... I nearly swerved off the road. They were offering me so little money, and it was like 60, 55 grand a week, whatever it was. It's like, oh, wow, poor Ashley. But Perry Groves had released a book, and the campaign via the website was, let's get Perry Groves' book to number one ahead of Ashley Cole. And in doing so, I think I emailed the publishers or the publicists or something like that and said, look, this is what we're doing. Could we get Perry on? And I think you're right. He was the first ex-player, but the first star, if you like, was Peter Hill Wood, the chairman.
Wow. Yes, I've just remembered that.
After about 10 or 12 episodes. So...
That was quite the coup.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was our first big-name guest and, you know... Not much names bigger than him at the time when you're chairman of the football club. So,
worth going back and trying to find that one, actually. I'd like to hear that again. What about this? This is from Mark in Malta. No doubt the two of you have been drinking together on several occasions. Any stories? Smiley face. Feels like he's implying romance.
Hmm.
It's not really true, though, is it? We haven't really been drinking together
really
very often.
It really isn't true. Funnily enough, you know, if I'm in London and we'll go for a few beers, but we haven't been like...
Out.
We haven't been like on a night out till we both have to crawl our separate ways. So
the most drunk I've been in your company was definitely in New York.
Oh, yes.
During a live podcast, I believe.
Yeah. That was a bit of a night out, I think, or stretched on into something. Yes, that was good fun, actually.
But no, I mean, there's not been loads of. I mean, the 99% of our interaction has been remote.
Yeah, it's true.
99.9, really.
Yeah, you've been over here to do a couple of podcasts, and I've been over there, and what have you, but. Yeah, I mean, this is why it's pretty easy for us to just carry on while other podcasters are going, oh, how do you
do it? We're corona-proof.
Oh, no. Yeah, exactly. We were way ahead of the game.
Stickers says, if you wrote the blog about Tottenham instead, would it be called shitpost?
Cockblog.
Thank God it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Neil Siglechner, I've had a real go at pronouncing that. You've had a few legends on the pod, Cesc, Wrighty, etc. Would you consider, or have you considered interviewing any players who may have left under a cloud? I guess Van Persie being the obvious one.
That's a really good one, because there's part of me that thinks, yeah, they'd be good interviews, but then there's also part of me that worries about being a bit of a hypocrite, you know?
Sure, yeah.
Having
it's difficult
been,
to,
yeah.
you couldn't say, hello, Robin, here's what I wrote about you at the time.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't think it was really abusive or anything, but it wasn't particularly friendly. And you know, I remember when I was going out to the US last summer, and they were doing various events at these sort of fan things, you know. Where they get groups of fans and they get some of the players and what have you. And I was asked, would I host one in LA?
Yeah.
And it would be like, you know, some players come out, you do a few games, you do a few interviews and what have you. Would I host one? I said, no, I wouldn't. Because I think, you know, there is a need for a certain measure of editorial independence, if you like.
Mm.
It's like when you meet someone you really don't like until you meet them, and then you go, oh, they're kind of an all right person, you know?
Yeah.
Which is an annoying thing. But also, there was an element, you know, from my point of view of like, what if I go out there and they sort of, you know, bring out the players and there's Mustafi. And you're kind of having to laugh and joke with Mustafi. And you know that you've said things about him and his football which are not flattering and you know, to my mind, criticism of footballers is okay, you know, once it doesn't go beyond the pale and into sort of personal abuse, and certainly not directing abuse to them, on their Twitters and stuff like that. But at the same time, I just would have felt like a right cunt if I'd been on the stage in LA and there's Mustafi and you're going, oh shit, man, the things I've said about you and some of your mistakes, this is awkward. I went to the event, as it turns out, and who did they bring out?
I can't remember.
Mustafi.
No.
Mustafi, and there was like four or five others, Nacho Monreal and everything else, but had it been me doing it, it would have been just toe-curling, you know? So it's trying to find that balance between sort of your own integrity and wanting to get the story and everything else. So
yeah, it's a really tricky one. I mean, this is sort of the same similar theme. This question, Roro Safari said, "You're a writer, podcaster, and content creator focused on Arsenal. Have you ever considered or desired trying to turn these skills into a job at the actual club?"
No, not really. Because, you know, I live here, I live in Dublin, and, I suppose there would have been a point if at some stage when things were maybe not quite as developed as they are now, Arsenal came along and said, we want, you know, to give you a job as I don't know what the job would be, but like, let's say there was an attractive job that paid you a lot of money at Arsenal Football Club. It would be really, really tempting.
Head of football.
Head of football, yeah. Well, I take that now. I would take that now if anyone's listening. But, you know, my ambition when it came to Arsenal was to one day play for the club, and beyond that, you know, I don't have the ambition to work.
That's
for
probably
Arsenal.
Not going to happen now.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is.
But let's never say never.
Hey, you know, who knows? If this thing goes on for much longer, players might have to leave and do their own thing, and they might be desperate. Might be desperate enough to call me. But yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, now it's well established as an independent voice, and you know, I think that's where it is and where it's going to stay.
Cool. What about this one? Toxic Avenger 666 says, has there ever come a time when you've thought, this is too much, I can't do it anymore? Or have you ever given yourself an ultimatum, like, if this stops being fun, I will stop doing it and just walk my dogs, drink beer and laugh at Leeds?
No, I mean, there hasn't. There are times when it's a lot of work, and I think there was, you know, when I was doing stuff for Arsblog and, you know, we were doing stuff at the same time for ESPN and, you know, there were times when I was having to write columns for ESPN and, you know, write columns for Arsblog where I felt like I wasn't really producing good stuff for ESPN because I was going through the motions and I was doing the good stuff for Arsblog. Like, if I had a good idea, I'd keep it for Arsblog and not do it for ESPN, obviously.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, look, it's always been fun, and it's never been, it's just so ingrained in my routine now, James, that I get up and I write, that I never really thought about it not being fun anymore.
Yeah.
So, look, and the other part of it is, you know, I'm not in a position to just walk away and drink beer and walk dogs. I still have to pay my mortgage and pay the bills and pay you guys and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not saying that's a chore by any means or anything like it. But look, at the end of the day, if you feel like anyone, I think, regardless of your job, you know, the way people will say, well, actors, they've got an easy life. And an actor will tell you, well, yeah, it might seem like that, but I've got to sit around on a set for 14 hours and I only get to work for, you know, 3 minutes to do a scene or whatever it is. Yes, yeah. I get a lot of money for it or whatever, but it's still, it's your own individual experience of something, right? Mm-hmm. And there are days where you go, okay, this is a lot of work or it's a pain in the hole. And certainly, you know, when things are a bit toxic in general among the fan base, it's not the most enjoyable. Like, I prefer when Arsenal win, and we haven't been doing enough of that in recent times, et cetera, et cetera. But then you realize, or you step back and you think, well, you know what? I'm actually writing about the football club I love for my job. This is my job.
Mm.
Think about what you would have said if somebody had come along and said to you, your job is going to be writing and talking about Arsenal. You would have bitten their hand off.
Back when you were programming that IKEA robot.
Exactly. Or doing all the shit jobs I've done over the time. DJing. I love DJing, but that can be a pain in the hole as well. You know, so I don't forget how fortunate I am and how lucky I am to be able to do what I do. And thankfully, people like it. So even if you do have some moments where you're like, whoa, you know, at the end of the day, it's an amazing thing to be able to do, and I don't take it for granted. So,
this question, I have to say, I don't fully understand. It's from Sunny Cool. Time to be honest, Arsblog. What techniques have you used over the years to squash the podcast competition, ex Mossad agents and all?
look, I've never ever, like I said with the blogs, I've never viewed anything as competition. I'm always happy to go on other people's podcasts.
Right.
You know, because I know I ask people for their time to come on my podcast, and I feel like that is something that I've got to do for other people, whether they're an established podcast or whether they're somebody that's just starting a podcast and they sort of tentatively reach out and say, is there any chance you could, you know, do the podcast? You know, I know. And you go, yeah, sure. Because it feels like you kind of owe it back to the great circle of karma or life or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I haven't killed any podcasts. There's billions of fucking Arsenal podcasts out there, guys. Loads of them. There's more every day. So the more the merrier.
They're bringing the old ones back now as well. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. but there's plenty of time to listen to podcasts. That is for sure.
That's for sure. And like, it's just about choice, isn't it? People have choice in what it is they listen to. And the more choice they have, the better. I think the more variety there is out there in all kinds of media, the better for everyone, because it means you can find something that you connect with. I haven't bumped anyone off yet.
Speaking of bumping people off, this one's quite morbid. Ooh. From Boo Nana. And Boo Nana says, slightly morbid, but in times like these, have you thought about how this site and community would continue to function if you weren't around? Is Gunnerblog your de facto successor? I mean, wow. I'm not going to make you put me in the will now on air.
Have I thought about it? Sure. Just from a, like, the point of view of I'd like it to just sort of continue and be there. If something did happen to me, and, you know, touch wood, nothing does. But I would like it to sort of be there as a kind of digital graffiti, if you like, that lasts. As for what happens to the community, you know, I don't know. Genuinely, I don't know. And I don't know how you even think about planning for something like that. But, yeah, that is very morbid, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And that was the last question.
We need one more, at least, just to get over.
What about this? Favourite silly voice from the old days from Kaiju. Their favourite is I Am Abue.
Oh, I think the man in the bar.
Sure.
Man in the bar, but it hurt. Because I would do, if anyone's a newish listener to the podcast, the man in the bar must have done 100 or 120, or he would do player histories. And it was basically a ridiculous Irish accent, which I can't even remember how it goes. It was like, hello, the man in the bar here. Hello. It was like that. And I would do like a 2-minute player history on, you know, Frank Stapleton was raised by penguins. And it was like that. But even doing that is quite sore. So it was a good one to do, but it hurt my throat. Arshav and I always loved, and Sylvester, Mikhail Sylvester as well.
Of course.
Do you want to funk?
A couple more. Chip in said, how much was the deal with LLA? We sort of said it was a fair amount of money. Finally, Nick Lucchesi, or Lucchesi, says, what do you think have emerged as the prevailing themes of the Arseblog mission over the years?
The Arseblog mission, the prevailing themes. That's a good question. I think, I mean, this is a question that other people would have to answer, but from my point of view, is producing good quality content for people and committing to doing that. When you introduced the live blog, it became popular really quickly, and you kind of have to keep that going.
Yeah.
You have to keep it going because people like it. And there's a sort of community around the live blog too, all these sort of disparate communities within this community. You know, there's the Arses, the forum, the Patreon, the Twitter, the Facebook, you know, all of those things. But there's a sort of chat community on the live blog as well, that people who never interact anywhere else on the site will meet and chat in the thing for the games, like the IRC thing we were talking about at the very start.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I hope it's that people appreciate the commitment to giving them the things that they like. Because, you know, you watch a game and you're doing a live blog, and sometimes I do a live blog and a match report at the same time while I'm watching the game. And right. That's not easy.
No.
I've trained myself to do it, but it's not, you know, it's not easy. It's not the optimal way to watch a game of football either. So I think it's just making sure that what people love about the website and like about the website and like about the podcast, they continue to get. And it remains high quality, and it remains something which is serious when it needs to be, and not serious. Doesn't take itself too seriously all the time, and reminds people that, you know, we're kind of all in this for one reason, because we all share this passion, we all share this love for Arsenal Football Club. That's why we're here. And it's a thing we all have in common, even if we have our differences of opinion, we can have those without it becoming tetchy and contentious and abusive. So that, I think, would be my answer to that.
And also to make sure people know that dolphins are cunts, I guess.
Yeah, and Teddy Sheringham and John Terry are absolute cunts. So.
Opposing John Terry.
Yeah.
It's the Arseblog mission.
Well, it is. I think that's on the Arseblog Facebook page.
Right.
Facebook, when you do a page, it says, you know, what is your mission? And I think the mission, maybe I had to delete it or something recently, but it was is it there? I don't know if it is. But it was like, the ultimate destruction of John Terry, something like that, was the mission of the website. So,
and a worthy mission it is too.
What an ambition to have.
Well, there you go. I think that's it.
I think it is. Well, thank you. Thank you for a great interview.
My pleasure.
I think you did a good job. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the questions and the conversation. So,
well, there you go. I hope people enjoyed listening at home. Where's this going out? Is this going on Patreon?
I guess Patreon first. We give the Patreon guys this
first.
Give them
a nibble at it.
Give them a nibble first, and then we can put it out on general release for everyone else. So.
Very nice. Well, thanks for letting me do it. I enjoyed it.
Well, thank you.
I'll let you sign off in a return to, you know, normality.
A return to normality. Well, look, thank you to everybody for listening. As always, and thank you for supporting us in whatever way that you do that, whether it's just visiting and downloading the site, whether it's on Patreon. We thank you very much indeed for it, because, you know, none of it would be worth very much without you guys at the other end of an iPod or a pair of speakers or a phone or a tablet, whatever it is. So thank you very much. You know, it's been 18 plus years and we're still chugging along. So hopefully plenty more to come. And thank you, James, as well.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.